Hello, fellow runners. I'm Jeff Gaudette, chief running enthusiast for Runners Connect, a community of expert coaches dedicated to providing runners the motivation, answers, and training you need to achieve your goals. This is our interview series where runners, coaches, and proven experts come on our show to teach you what they've learned along the way so you can grab as much information as possible and apply it directly to improve your running right now. All of our previous episodes are available at runnersconnect.net, or you can subscribe to our iTunes feed to get updated as soon as we post new interviews. On today's show, we have elite runner and marathoner Camille Herron. Camille has a marathon PR of 2:37:14, and she also represented the United States at the 2011 Pan American Games. Today, Camille is going to share with us how she overcame multiple stress fractures during a collegiate career to eventually allow herself to train healthy and run an average 110 to 120 miles a week. She's also going to share with us the secret to training, which actually allowed her to run her easy days slower and still race faster. Finally, Camille is going to share with us her personal experience with stress fractures, as well as her research as her postdoctorate and master's thesis in stress fracture recovery. So if you're interested in learning from elite runners and finding some applicable training principles you can apply to your running today, get ready for this awesome interview. Welcome to the show, Camille. I appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule today to talk with us and share your infinite wisdom on training and look forward to really learning a lot from you today.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Jeff. I'm looking forward to sharing my knowledge and trying to help others. So
yeah, it's a great feeling when you can definitely help somebody improve their running, that's for sure. So to get started, I want to just give people that may not know you, who don't follow your blog, just a brief introduction into kind of, you know, who you are, kind of your little bit of your running background, how you got started, and then kind of where you're at now. So talk to me about how, you know, you got started in running at a younger age and then kind of how things progressed from there.
Yeah, so I grew up in Oklahoma. I'm a born and bred Oklahoman. both of my parents were really good athletes, and my mom was a swimmer primarily and golfer, and my dad and my grandpa played basketball at Oklahoma State. So I grew up around sports, and just knowing that my parents were athletes, you know, it kind of inspired me to want to be like my parents and to get involved in athletics. So I started out as a basketball player from an early age, and I had seen pictures and videos of my dad playing basketball, and I remember seeing the Globetrotters on TV. And I think there was a female Globetrotter back in the 80s, and you know, just seeing a female athlete like that, I kind of aspired to be a female Globetrotter at one point. So I was pretty handy with the basketball. Used to spin it on my finger and, you know, go between my legs and that sort of thing. And I grew up playing basketball, and I think basketball taught me a certain level of toughness. You know, just dealing with aches and pains, and, you know, playing through that, and you know, you get knocked down and just swung all over the court. Mm-hmm. And I think I kind of learned early on playing basketball, and realized that I could wear out my opponents running all over the court. And so that was kind of my strategy, is I would just run all over the place and try to wear out whoever was guarding me, you know, man-to-man guarding me. Mm-hmm. And so when we got to junior high, and we had to, everyone on the basketball team had to go out for track for off-season conditioning. And I remember from the first day, I could just run and run and run, and I just didn't get tired. And I remember the other people on the track team would start getting tired, and they'd start walking, and I was literally kept going and doing loops around the junior high. And so it was pretty well known from the first day that I had a lot of endurance, and you know, I always just thought it was toughness. I always mm-hmm. just felt like I was tougher than everyone, and I didn't realize that, you know, it was, you know, I've got the inherent slow twitch fibers. I think I read about that in Kids Sports Illustrated about slow twitch and fast twitch fibers, and I remember pointing it out to my track coach. And she told me, you know, hey, you're going to be a long distance runner. So I pretty much got into running in junior high, and I never won a race in junior high. I always seemed to get outkicked by somebody.
Those fast twitch fibers not kicking in there.
I didn't quite understand the whole strategy of it, and we only ran probably a mile or two, and probably not even 2 miles, probably like a mile a day. So I wasn't really conditioned too much in junior high. I think some days we'd just play basketball anyways. So,
right.
so this track wasn't something that was, I was really serious about. It was just something we just did for conditioning. And then in eighth grade, I went out for cross country because we either had to go out for softball or cross country. And, cross country was the natural fit for me, obviously. And I remember the first meet that I went to, 50 to 100 girls, and they all, I'd always been, tall and lean. My dad and grandpa were tall and lean. And here I was surrounded by 50 to 100 other girls that were just like me, tall and lean. I pretty much knew from that point I'd found my sport. So when I got to high school, I had a lot of success with cross country. I was probably a better cross country runner than track runner. So when I got to high school, I just decided to ditch the basketball and just take off with the running.
Yeah, good choice.
it was pretty awesome. My freshman year of cross country, I ended up making All-State, which was top 10. And that was the first time anyone from my school had done that.
Wow.
And my coach was like, hey, you've got to, because I wasn't enrolled in track, actually. I thought you could just run cross country and you didn't have to run track. I didn't realize that if you did one, you should do the other. So
yep.
I had to drop French and enroll in track.
And
wow. So during track season, I won my first race, which was a huge turning point for me because I love the feeling of winning, and I just wanted to win everything after that point.
Right.
So once I won my first race, and I just kind of went with it, and by state, we won state in the 4x800 relay. And I got second in the 2 mile and got fourth in the mile. And then, I think the seed had pretty much been planted that I was pretty good at running and pretty good at the longer the distance, the better I got. And so my sophomore year, I made All-State cross country again and won state in track in the mile and the 2 mile. And then my junior and senior years, I was really successful. I think I'd won at one point maybe 36 races in a row.
Wow.
From my sophomore year to my junior year. And then I had my first injury. I had a stress fracture in my foot 2 weeks before the state cross country meet. And that pretty much started a whole string of injuries with me. I ended up having 7 stress fractures in
Wow.
2.5 years. One thing I've got to point out is that I'd had a huge growth spurt. I'd grown like 5 inches between my freshman and sophomore years of high school. And I was, kind of like a calf coming into the world, really gangly and just kind of wobbly and awkward and stuff. But, it just was naturally pretty talented anyways. But I think as we started increasing the mileage and the intensity, that I started having a lot of problems. So I had a lot of stress fractures my last 2 years of high school, and I wasn't really able to show, how good I could be, because I was injured most of the time. But my senior year, I made a comeback. I got a stress fracture in August, and then I cross-trained and started running in October. And I made a comeback and ended up winning regionals and made all state again in cross-country. And we had to run an all-star meet, and I finished second at that.
Wow.
And the University of Tulsa coach was at the meet, and that following Monday he gave me a call and had seen me run, and he was really interested in recruiting me. So I was recruited by a bunch of schools, and I went to Foot Locker Regionals also, and I finished 34th there. One thing I've got to point out is in Oklahoma, we only run 2 miles for cross country.
Okay.
So to go to Foot Lockers was 5K, and so it was, you know, like my first time to run 5K, and I ran 19 minutes.
Okay.
And so a bunch of colleges started recruiting me after that, and I ultimately decided to go to the University of Tulsa. And because it was a good school academically, and I really liked the coaches at that time. So going into my freshman year, the coaches that recruited me actually left and went to Kansas.
Okay.
And then they got a new coach. And the first month of college, I basically went from like 30 miles per week to 60 miles per week. And it was a lot of intensity, a lot of mileage, and I started having stress fractures again. I had 3 stress fractures my freshman year of college.
Wow.
And you know, obviously as a freshman in college, you're under a lot of stress, and I was pre-med, so I eventually wanted to go to medical school, and so I was under a lot of stress, and just the training and everything was just breaking down my body. So I ended up redshirting my sophomore year, and then after that, they ended up giving me a medical redshirt because they didn't think that I could or that I should run competitively because they didn't understand why I was getting these stress fractures and and they just thought, you know, well, my body can't handle that sort of training load. So so anyways, I pretty much resorted to being a hobby runner. And in the meantime, I met my husband, Connor, who was a post-collegiate professional runner.
Okay.
And he ran at the University of Oklahoma. He's a 6-time All-American, ran for ASICS and Power Bar. So he was a really successful runner. And he's from Ireland, but he got his U.S. citizenship.
Okay.
And he was trying to train to qualify for the Olympic marathon trials in 2004. So I was kind of his assistant, and, you know, he would do his long runs every Sunday, and I'd be handing him bottles and, you know, helping him with his own running. And he ended up qualifying for the Olympic marathon trials and then went to the Olympic marathon trials. And I tell you, just being at the Olympic trials, and I was just really, really inspired by being around all these stars. And I remember meeting Meb and seeing the Hansons. You know, it was just, I was exposed to this whole world of professional running through my husband. And I think I just got really inspired by that and wanted to, you know, start training seriously and really just get back into competitive running. So.
And 1 second, I just want to get the timeline correct. How long was the time between you graduated college, or I should say that you stopped running in college competitively and then went on to, I guess, 2004. So how long was that break that you kind of took?
Yeah, I would say it was probably about 3 years. And so over about 3 year span, I was a hobby runner, and I just ran recreationally, probably about an hour a day, maybe, you know, an hour a day, 6 days a week, like an hour. And so I don't know, it's probably about 40 to 50 miles per week.
Okay.
And so I wasn't keeping a training log or anything. I was just kind of running for stress relief and just for general health and stuff.
Okay.
And I also did like strength training. I would go to the gym twice a week and do weights and that sort of thing. So changed my mindset to, you know, just running for health and fitness, and wasn't doing it competitively. So after I went to the Olympic trials in 2004, and it was kind of over about a 6 month time span that before I knew it, I don't know what happened, and I don't even remember if I was keeping a training log at the time, but one day, Connor and I went out for a run. We were training, we'd gone to Boulder, Colorado to train. And I was actually running further than what Connor was going for. And he was like, he's like, what's going on? He hadn't even paid attention to what I was doing. And so he wanted to know how many miles per week I was running. And so I, you know, went through and like calculated it, and it came out that I was running about 70 miles per week.
Oops.
and he thought that was pretty serious, you know, and he thought, well, okay, you know, you've been running, you know, 70 miles per week. Why don't we start throwing some workouts at you? So this is like July 2004, and I started doing some actual workouts, and you know, I basically went from a 19 minute 5K. That fall I went from a 19 minute 5K, and got down, and I basically skipped the 18s and went to like 17:50, and ran my first 10K over 36 minutes. And my first 15K at like 55:46 or something like that. So we were like stunned, you know. Here I was, you know, just kind of been a hobby runner, and you know, just had finally gotten my body healthy and training consistently, and I think we were just kind of blown away, you know, thinking, wow, you know, I'm finally making it happen. And you know, I was pretty much running faster than the girls on my college team, you know, and I was just running, you know, running on my own or whatever. But yeah, I went a fifth year of college. So I started college in 2000, and I went a fifth year. So I didn't graduate till 2005.
Okay.
And so in this process that, you know, I was got up to 70 miles per week, and, you know, I started getting really fast and dropping time. It was my fifth year of college. And
if you don't mind me interrupting real quick, what was the turning point physically that, you know, you went from, obviously you struggled your freshman and sophomore year to adapt to, you know, basically going from 30 to 60 miles a week, which is definitely understandable. A lot of college athletes have that problem. So what was it physically that changed in you that allowed you to, you know, pretty much just go from, you know, jogging around, you know, 40, 50 miles a week, just dilly-dilly, to being able to run 70 miles a week and doing some workouts? Do you know, can you point to anything specifically, or?
Totally. And probably the first thing that happened was in 2003, I met Frank Shorter, and he signed a poster for me that said, run for stress relief. And I don't know, I don't remember what the circumstances were, if I had told him, you know, I was pre-med and, you know, wanted to go to medical school or whatever, you know, but he was basically trying to tell me, you know, just relax when you run, you know, and let running feel good, and, you know, just run for stress relief. So I think I started thinking about what he was trying to tell me. You know, I'm kind of a deep thinker. I was like, you know, is he trying to tell me something? And so I basically slowed down the pace. And I just remember, like, mentally thinking about what he was telling me and physically feeling like I started running more relaxed and enjoying my runs more, and started noticing the scenery around me and, like, breathing the fresh air. And I just felt like I'd be, like, differently. I just felt differently because mentally I was thinking differently. And then in December 2003, I started reading. I was taking physics at the time, and I was reading about the Kenyans and how they grew up running barefoot and, you know, training in worn-out shoes and this sort of thing. And, you know, I had been hurt my whole, you know, I'd been hurt off and on, you know, a good majority of my running career. And I was kind of wanted to put myself to the test and start training, like training in racing flats, basically, because I figured, you know, they were minimal shoes and, you know, didn't have any bells and whistles to them. So I ended up buying, I was also a really big fan of Frank Shorter, or Frank Shorter and Bill Rogers. And I ended up buying some vintage racing flats. And it was actually the Asics Onitsuka Ultimate 81s. It was like a remake of a popular shoe. And so I basically started from scratch on my mileage because I had taken a break at some point that fall. And I just started training in racing flats. And I figured I don't have anything to lose. You know, I've been hurt. I might as well just see what happens kind of thing. And before I knew it, you know, by that summer, I had gotten up to 70 miles per week. And that was the most I'd ever run. I used to always get to about 60 miles per week, and my body would start feeling kind of awkward and weird and stuff. And here I was, you know, I made this change in my shoes, and you know, I was able to run more, basically.
So what you mentioned, you also mentioned that the pace slowed. Do you have a recollection of like what you were running, you know, what kind of easy paces you were running before and then what you were running afterwards when you kind of just relaxed about it?
I think I was probably running before that kind of turning point for me. I was probably going like maybe 7 minutes, 7:30 pace, which is what my college teammates did. And I think I had just gotten it in me, you know, that you go out and you run as hard as you can for an hour every day. And I didn't think anything of that. But when you know, I kind of had this turning point for me where I just started running easy. I started probably running about 8:30, 9 minute mile pace. And we had because I went to University of Tulsa, and Tulsa has Riverside, which is this trail that's marked every half mile and it's marked every mile. So I know for definitely, you know, I probably went from about 7:30 pace to about 8:30, 9 minute mile pace. And I felt so different and so much better making that switch to running slower. And by that fall, I think I had gotten down. I think I'd gone maybe from like 19 minutes, and I ran like one. I didn't race very often, so I basically only ran like the race for the cure every fall. So I think I ran like 18:29 or something like that. And I wasn't doing any workouts or anything. I just kind of jumped in a 5K and ran, you know, and so yeah, that I think that's kind of when things started kind of clicking. You know, here I was, I just slowed down the pace and just randomly jumped in a 5K and, you know, dropped like 30 seconds. So
That's it's funny. It sounds like a Runner's World headline, you know, like run slower to run to race faster, you know, and
exactly.
it sounds too good to be true, but obviously it is, and it's you're not the only one that's done, you know, made that switch, you know, like that. Along the same lines, like how did you know, being a competitive athlete, you were in college, your college teammates were, you know, running a lot faster, you came from that background of, you know, running faster. How did you deal with those those thoughts every once in a while when you're like, oh, I feel like I need to push, I want to get faster? Because I know even when I realized that running slower is it was better, I always had those days where I wanted to push because it either it felt good or I kind of kept thinking like, oh, I do need to kind of keep going here. And I know the athletes that I coach have that problem where you know, even when they know they need to slow down, they're always wanting to push it to see themselves get better. Did you have those struggles? And if so, like, how did you kind of overcome them?
Yeah, so because my degree was in exercise and sports science, I became really interested in wanting to know why, you know, running slower made me faster. And so I ended up going to grad school. I basically decided, because I did research my last 2 years of my last 2 years of college, that I really liked the research and the science. And I really wanted to go on to grad school to study all of that and to understand bone and exercise and how to keep the body healthy. I basically learned that, you know, the slower I came to value why running slow worked. And basically it's because of working through aerobic metabolism, and your body learns to use your slow twitch fibers rather than your fast twitch fibers. And because you're using your slow twitch fibers, you're going to end up developing more mitochondria, more blood capillaries around the muscle, a greater blood volume to carry oxygen. And so I came to value, you know, I need to run slow because all these things are going to take place in the body that are going to ultimately make me faster.
Right.
So even though, you know, I had this mindset, this college mindset, and I kind of just threw it out the window and said, that doesn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
I need to run slow because metabolically, it's going to develop all these changes in my body that are going to help me, you know, with endurance running.
Mm-hmm.
So,
no, I mean, I think that's a great way to think of it. And that's how I always thought of it too, is, you know, I would say, you know, what's the purpose of today's run, you know, and
yeah,
if the day was an easy day and it was really to recover, to just run easy, then, you know, I had to keep telling myself, you know, the purpose is to run easy. And one of the things that I always try to tell the athletes that I coach is that, you know, aerobic development really occurs. It's the same, you know, whether you're running, you know, for example, if somebody is a 19 minute 5K-er, you know, it's really the same if you're running 9 minute pace or if you're running 8 minute pace, but
yes,
there's way more stress on your body at 8 minute pace and you're not going to recover as quickly. So it's detrimental because you're not getting any more benefit and it's only adding, you know, potential risk for getting injured and not recovering. So,
yeah.
But that's hard to get through, you know, like to get through to people. It's not something that's instinctual. You know, it always, well, if I run faster, if I'm breathing harder, I'm getting fitter faster, which isn't always the case.
Yeah, exactly. And you mentioned recovery, and the way I think of it is that by running slower, you're basically resting your fast twitch fibers,
mm-hmm.
and you're using different muscle groups. You're using more slow twitch fibers. And so, yeah, I think of it from a recovery perspective that you move differently when you run slow. And, you know, and the benefits to that is that, you know, you rest your fast twitch fibers. And so when you actually do a hard workout, you're able to go even faster because you're so well rested.
Mm-hmm. No, that's fantastic advice. And I have to thank you for, you wrote a post, I don't know if maybe it was a couple weeks ago,
yeah,
or so, but I'm going to give a shout out to one of the athletes I coach. Her name is Jamie. And she read that post and she always really struggles, but we've been trying to increase her mileage recently from kind of like the 60 mile week range to 70. And she's really struggled with being tired and always wanting to run faster. And she read your post and she said, I think it finally stuck. You know, I think part of it sometimes is, you know, no matter how many times somebody can tell you, when you hear it from somebody who's, you know, at your ability level and running at, you know, your level, sometimes it sticks a little bit more. So if you don't mind, can you tell us, you know, what your current, marathon PR is and then what your current easy pace is, just to, cause I think people would be
sure.
surprised at what it is and think to themselves, wow, I run 45 minutes slower for the marathon and I run my easy runs faster. So maybe I'm doing something wrong.
Yeah. So I've gotten down to 2:37 in the marathon so far. And my easy day pace usually starts out around 9 minute mile pace. And I would say I probably average around 8:30 per mile on my easy days. So I might start at about 9 minute mile pace and I might get down to about eight minute mile pace.
Mm-hmm.
And so you brought up a good point, you know, as people start to increase their mileage, they might struggle you know, sustaining the same easy day pace, because, you know, the body will start to break down. So what I found is the higher my mileage went, the slower I had to go on my easy days to be able to recover from
mm-hmm.
that increased mileage. But what I found out over time is, you know, even though I had to initially slow down the pace, as I've gotten fitter,
mm-hmm.
I'm more comfortable handling and maybe a slightly faster pace, but
mm-hmm.
it was just kind of an adjustment that I had to go through.
Right.
And so, yeah, so I definitely think that as you increase your mileage, you got to slow down the easy day pace to recover better.
Yeah. So when you were increasing your mileage, because you run ready anywhere between 120, 130 average now or on a high training week,
mm-hmm.
When you were increasing to that level, Did you have any periods where you went through where you kind of just struggled, where it was like, you know, your body was adapting and maybe your workouts weren't going as well, or you weren't able to, you know, you just felt more tired? And if so, you know, how did you kind of mentally work through that? And I'll ask that for now, and I'll have a follow-up question after.
Okay. Yeah, so when my first 100 mile, or I guess you could say fall 2004 was when I started to drop a lot of time, and we saw that my times said that I could potentially qualify for the Olympic marathon trials. So my husband, between about 2004 and 2006, I worked on building up my mileage to over 100 miles per week. And I remember the first time I ran 100 miles per week, I remember just feeling like I was looser, like my body was more fluid and just felt looser. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it all had to do with the frequency, you know, I was running more often and running further. And it just felt like I could run all day and not get tired. So I definitely felt like I kind of like, you know, quote, quote, flipped the switch.
Right.
You know, with the mileage, that I seem to thrive on the higher mileage.
And sorry, just real quick, two things.
Sure.
Did you, so it was about a 2-year process when you went kind of from maybe the 670 mile a week range to the 100. And then during that time, you know, you said when you got to about 100, things clicked. During that increase, did you feel like you struggled, or was it, you know, a fairly gradual process where you felt like it went okay?
Yeah, I felt like it was a gradual process that went pretty well. You know, we started adding in quality workouts, and I was doing really well, you know, seeing drops in time and that sort of thing. And so it was kind of a process of building up to 100 miles per week. And I guess the only thing I struggled with at times was I was in grad school.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were times where I was really stressed and I couldn't put in the consistent quality work.
Mm-hmm.
So I would just resort to, you know, running mileage. And, you know, I might cut back my mileage if I was under a lot of stress. But I mean, I was very consistent with my mileage. I always kept it really high.
Mm-hmm.
And I would only cut back if I got really tired.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I got to 100 miles per week, I was in the middle of doing my master's thesis. So I was basically running for transportation. I would basically run to the lab in the morning to start an experiment, and then I would run home. And then my husband would drive me back to school, and I would work in the lab all day. And then I would run home from work in the evening time. So I found a way to get in my mileage by that. You know, it's kind of a lifestyle for me to run, you know, and try to fit it in with my lab experiments. But yeah, so as far as, you know, from that point on, probably the next year and a half, from about that November 2006 to about spring and summer of 2008, I had noticed maybe about like after about 4 to 6 months after I got over 100 miles per week that I started feeling tired.
Mm-hmm.
And just feeling kind of worn down all the time, and you know, getting sick and dealing with kind of body aches and that sort of thing. And I didn't really, I just thought I was under a lot of stress, and I thought it was just a normal part of the training, you know, from running more miles.
Right.
And what I found out was that I was low iron, and that I needed to start increasing my iron intake you know, to match all that foot strike, the hemolysis,
right.
You know, your blood cells, you break down your blood cells through all that foot strike. And
I'm going to interrupt you real quick here. I'm going to make a note for this, but we're going to include a link. We have a post on our site, and I'll link to yours. I think you have one as well about iron and runners. That way, if anybody who's listening to this does struggle and or maybe feels that their iron's a little bit low, we'll send you two resources about, you know, exactly what's going on, what the iron is, what it's doing, and how you can increase those stores. So, sorry, I just wanted to let the audience know that. So, go ahead.
So, anyways, I started taking liquid iron every day. So prior to that, I used to take, I mean, I was a big meat eater, you know, I always thought that, oh, you know, I eat a lot of meat, surely I'm getting enough iron, you know, through my diet. And, you know, when I went and got my blood checked and I found this out, it was kind of like a light bulb, you know, went off in my head that, hey, you know, I'm probably breaking down a lot of blood cells. I need to take more iron. So I started taking it every day. And within a week, my mile repeat times dropped like 10 seconds off of my mile repeats.
Wow.
And over the next few months, I basically dropped 3 minutes off my half marathon PR. And I dropped like a minute off my 10K. And I dropped 3 minutes off my marathon time. So I tell you that I've had a couple of turning points in my life, and one of them was definitely getting on the liquid iron, you know, and it just made such a huge difference for me. So, but yeah, I've kind of, did you have a follow-up question or?
Oh, yeah. So the follow-up question I had was, and you kind of answered it, but, was kind of, you know, how long did you feel like it took? Cause one of the questions that I get when, I have runners increasing their mileage is that, you know, they always want to know how soon they're going to benefit from putting in all the extra miles. Cause you know, especially for runners who have jobs and all that stuff, you know, it's a lot of work. You went through that. It's like, you know, you're sitting there, you're saying, oh my God, all I do is run all day. I run to work, I run back from work, you know, I run to pick up my kids. And it's like, and you know, you always want to say, you know, I always wonder, when is this going to pay off? And so for you, obviously it was a long process of increasing your mileage, you know, overall it was, you know, 4 to 5 years. But did you feel like you benefited fairly quickly from it? Or did you feel like, it, you know, you had a couple months sometimes where you're like, seriously, I'm running a lot and I'm just tired and I'm not racing any faster. You know, what's going on?
Yeah. So as I pointed out, when I got over 100 miles per week, I definitely felt like it made a huge difference. Mm-hmm. But then within a few months, I started to feel a little bit run down. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I really think it was because of stress and probably nutrition, you know, trying to get enough calories to match all the energy expenditure. Mm-hmm. And then also the iron was, you know, a huge part of it because, I was breaking down a lot of red blood cells and I wasn't getting enough to match it.
Mm-hmm.
And, I've found like I even now, like, even though I got my iron back up and everything, I have to continue to take iron about 5 times a week.
Mm-hmm.
And that's to keep my ferritin up. I don't get off the iron. I basically don't want to get off the iron because
right.
I don't want my ferritin to drop again. And so it's something that I keep continue to do as long as I'm a professional runner.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have to do it to be able to do what I do. And I've actually found when I go to train at high altitude, I have to take more iron.
Right.
Yeah, so that's something else. You know, I talk about that on my website and my experience going to high altitude and the concerns that you have to deal with when you go to high altitude. So one of them is definitely iron.
Right, definitely. Actually, you brought up a good point that we actually talked about briefly before we actually started the call here. Was you know, that you have to eat a lot in order to obviously maintain running that much mileage. And it's funny, it's always a question that people would ask me too, when they would say, you know, like, oh my God, you run that much. How much do you eat? And I would say, you know, sometimes I literally would eat 2 dinners. You know, I would, you know, when I was running 150 miles a week, I would eat dinner at like 5 and it'd be a full dinner. And then at like 8 o'clock, I'm like, I would be starving again. And I'd have another full dinner. And I think that's something that, you know, athletes struggle with, that, you know, they're running a lot of times because they want to get fitter or lose weight. And so there's that conundrum they have where it's like, well, if I run more and then I don't, and if I don't eat, then I'm going to lose a lot of weight. But what ends up happening is you know, definitely break the body down a ton. So if you don't mind sharing, and I think you do this on your blog as well, but, you know, kind of what you, you know, what a daily, you know, nutrition intake would look like for you and that kind of thing.
Yeah, so definitely, you know, for me to be able to run 120 to 130 miles per week, I have to eat a lot of calories.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually had my diet analyzed when I was in grad school. And at that time, I was running about 80 miles per week. And it came out that I was eating about 3,200 calories a day.
Mm-hmm.
And we found out that I was in energy balance by 70 kilocals, which is actually really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
so you basically want to be in energy balance. You know, if you're within 100 to 200 kilocals a day, you know, of what you're expending, then, you know, that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, you know, as I've gotten up to 120 to 130 miles per week, I would estimate I'm probably eating about 4,000 to 5,000 calories a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I eat probably about 6 to 7 small meals a day.
Okay.
So I'm eating about every 2 to 4 hours. And one thing I learned in grad school was they told me all about, you know, blood sugar. It's all about blood sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you eat frequently throughout the day, it helps to keep your blood sugar more stable so that when you run, you know, you're not bonking during the middle of a run because you, you know, haven't eaten for 6 hours or something.
Right, right.
So they taught me all about, you know, eating, especially if you're running twice a day, and making sure that you're getting enough calories between your runs.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I basically, you know, I eat before, if I'm running in the morning, I eat before my run, I eat after my run, I'll have lunch,
mm-hmm.
I'll have a snack in the middle of the afternoon, you know, I'll go for a run, I'll eat after my run, then I have dinner. So you get the point that, you know, I'm eating pretty much all day. It's almost a chore in itself. You know, I have to think about eating. You know, when I used to work in the lab at Purdue for 2 years, and I had to bring snacks to work because otherwise I would get hungry. You know, I'd be working the lab, and I'd start getting hungry, and I'd have to go back to the office and eat something. So, yeah, definitely people that work, I think they have to be very proactive about making sure they're getting enough calories throughout the day. And I've had a lot of people contact me, like teachers and stuff, and
mm-hmm.
you know, they're dealing with kids and they're in the classroom and, you know, they're starving. And, you know, I just tell them, well, you know, put some snacks in your desk, you know, make sure you always have a water bottle or two available.
Right.
And, you know, hydration is really, really important. Especially, you know, I'm training in Oklahoma now. And, you know, we deal with, you know, high humidity, high
mm-hmm.
temperatures, a lot of wind.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had to really up my hydration because I really struggled with that when we first got here. So
mm-hmm. interesting.
Yeah.
One thing I wanted to talk about is, you know, your not only your research with stress fractures, but also your experience. I guess if anybody could say they were an expert, it might be you in terms of both your clinical application as well as your, you know, personal experience. So let's start with, you know, how can athletes avoid stress fractures in terms of, you know, whether it be through diet, through training, through exercises,
mm-hmm.
those types of things. What do you recommend to people, and what do you do yourself? Because I'm sure it's still a concern for you. Obviously, for people that don't know, Camille is actually just coming off a stress fracture herself. So.
Yeah, so I as I mentioned, I had 7 stress fractures between high school and my first year of college. And for me, the problem had more to do with mechanics and the intensity of my training. So I believe that the intensity of your training is more of a risk factor than the mileage. And the only way that the mileage will start to become a risk factor is if you're not getting enough calories to match the energy expenditure, and then your body will actually start to break down because
mm-hmm.
of that. But I definitely believe that intensity is more of a factor. And, you know, I was only running 20 to 30 miles per week,
mm-hmm.
and we did a lot of sprinting in high school. And I don't think it was very good for my body at the time because I had grown a lot,
mm-hmm.
and I hadn't put on the muscle to match. You know, my bones had grown really fast, but I hadn't put on the muscle, so my body was really tight.
Mm-hmm.
And muscle pulls on bone, and if you're doing a lot of high intensity exercise, that can further, cause the muscle to pull on bone, and you know, if the muscle becomes fatigued, it starts to transfer the stress to the bone,
mm-hmm.
So definitely, I think that, you know, especially young kids, I mean, most high school college coaches think that, you know, they're all afraid of running a lot of high mileage. And I tell you, you will not get hurt from running easy high mileage. It's going to be when you start throwing in all the speed work and all the 400s and the mile repeats and that sort of thing that is going to start to break you down. But as far as like being able to stay healthy, I think it really just comes down to a balance between stress and rest. And you have to realize that your bones are always in a remodeling state. So they're always being broken down and built back up. So if you're applying a lot of stress to the body, that stress can become so great that the bone will start to break down faster than it can be built back up. And so you know, that's usually how stress fracture happens, is when the body is under too much stress. And you know, not just the stress of running, it can also be the mental stress, you know, that you're dealing with. You know, being a student, being a college student, and you're not getting enough sleep. So your body rebuilds itself in your sleep because of growth hormone release. And so, you know, you have to think about the body, and not just with stress fractures, but injuries in general. You have to think about stress versus rest. And if the body is under more stress, it's going to start to break down.
Definitely. So, you know, after, you know, unfortunately, let's say somebody does get a stress fracture, what's the return to running look like? I know obviously there's different amounts of time that you'll need off based on, you know, where their stress fracture is. For example, you know, smaller bones like your metatarsals will need, you know, maybe anywhere from 5 to 8 weeks, whereas something like your femur is going to need, you know, closer to 10 to 12 weeks. But what does the process look like when they're coming back? And specifically, something that I've heard is, I don't know, I can't actually remember where I heard this, and you can let me know if it's, that you feel if it's true or not, but when the bone heals itself, obviously there's some calcification that's left over, as kind of the way I've been taught to visualize it is, you know, kind of filling in a crack, you know, like with like thinking of it like icing. And at some point, you know, it overfills. And so there's a calcification there in the area. And that sometimes leads to what they call phantom pains when returning to injury, where, you know, you start running and maybe after a week or two, there's some dull achiness, you know, after your run that persists. Have you found that to be true? Am I off on that, or what's your experience?
Yeah, so I basically did my master's thesis on enhancing bone recovery.
Okay, so I'm asking the right person.
Yes, you're asking the right person. So we looked at the application of whole body vibration training as a way of enhancing the healing process. And so I had to learn basically everything there was to know about bone recovery and trying to heal bone faster. And yeah, you're right. The bone forms a bone callus, which is the calcification around the bone. And as far as that bone callus will be around the bone for at least a year. You know, it depends on the size of the bone and the severity of the stress fracture or the fracture. So, you know, a smaller bone might only take like 8 months for that bone to remodel itself and be back to normal, versus, you know, a femur might take like 12 months because it's a larger bone. And so, you know, since you have that bone callus around the bone, it's going to interrupt the surrounding soft tissue and nerves. And so it takes nerve longer to recover than the actual bone and stuff. So the nerves will be irritated. And so what happens is when people get back to running, you know, the nerves are irritated, the soft tissue is irritated, and people are concerned that they're going to, you know, redevelop a stress fracture where that bone callus is.
Right.
And the truth is, the bone is actually stronger than it's ever been because it has that bone callus around the bone. And so if you're going to develop a stress fracture anywhere, it's going to be in a different location than where that bone callus is. And so what happens is, you know, people get back to running and they start to try to push the pace and the mileage too quickly. And because they have this little bit of pain from that bone callus and the surrounding nerves, you know, they start to place stress elsewhere in the body.
I see.
And you know, it can lead to compensation type injuries.
So the more of the concern is from the compensation where, you know, because you're feeling the pain, you're maybe limping or just the other, another part of your body is taking stress as opposed to a reoccurrence of the stress factor.
Yes, yes, exactly. So it's, that's basically what happened to me with my stress fractures, in high school and college was I would try to push the intensity to, you know, quote, quote, get back in shape.
Right.
And I was compensating. And I ended up getting three stress fractures in a row in my left foot, and so what happened was I'd gotten a stress fracture in the second metatarsal, and then my foot gait changed ever so slightly that I started placing stress on the third metatarsal, and I ended up developing a stress fracture in that one, and then I ended up getting one on my fourth metatarsal, so. So definitely, you know, I think people need to realize that it's a process for bone to heal itself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's going to take time for it to be normal again. And just because they feel pain doesn't necessarily mean that they need to stop running.
Mm-hmm.
They just need to be get back and be consistent with their training. And the pain should go away as long as, you know, they progress back at a reasonable rate.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm making the comeback right now with my, my own heel, and I'm going through this process, you know, and because I know what's happening in with the bone and with the nerves and the soft tissue. And so the hardest thing for me right now is, the soft tissue basically braces around the bone to protect it.
Right.
You know, when you're injured, and then when you start back running because of, you know, the impact force and, you know, things are stretching and stuff. I can feel the muscle pulling on the bone. And you know, I've been running every day here now for the past 5 days or so. And the pain has started to go away. The pain is going away. The flexibility of the muscles is coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a process that you have to go through. Kind of like when you become a runner for the first time and, you know, you kind of have to get over a hump.
Right, right.
You know, when you get into running. So it's kind of the same thing with a stress fracture.
Yeah. So I think the hardest part about it is, you know, determining what is, you know, like for the athlete is determining what is, you know, that referred pain that you're talking about, you know, where the muscles and the nerve endings and when it's, you know, a possibility that the bone's still not healed completely. And what I always tell athletes is that if it's a duller pain that kind of goes away quickly or, you know, within, like you go to sleep and you wake up the next morning and it's not there and you start your run and it's not there, then that's usually a sign that it's probably that nerve ending, that calcification. Whereas if they feel either a sharp pain or that it persists, that it's like, you know, they wake up the next day and it still hurts or they, as soon as they start their run, it hurts. Is that an accurate assessment of a good way to determine, you know, which pain is which?
Yeah, this is really good because I can distinguish between bone pain and muscle pain. And the thing about bone pain will hurt and it won't stop hurting.
Okay.
It will hurt like all the time. It will like throb and hurt, you know. And muscle pain is something that if you get back into running or you know, you get back to running and it will actually get better as you keep running. Because it starts to stretch out and warm up and that sort of thing. So yeah, so that's pretty much how I can tell, you know, I'm coming back from my stress fracture and my body actually feels better the more I run. And when I wake up each day, my foot is feeling a little bit better because the muscles are getting stretched out.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, the bone is healed because I'm not feeling that like continuous sharp pain, you know, that's pretty distinct with bone.
Mm-hmm.
So muscle is something that it'll warm up, it'll get to feeling better. And, you know, I have a lot of people write to me about, like, shin pain,
mm-hmm.
and they want to know, you know, do you think this is a shin splint or do you think this is a stress fracture?
Right.
And the way to delineate is a stress fracture, like I said, is pain that will, it will be there and it will get worse with time
mm-hmm.
if you keep running on it.
Right.
It will get so bad that you can't run. You get so
right.
bad. Versus shin splints is something that will actually... the muscles will loosen up as you keep running. You know, it might start hurting at first, but as you continue to run, it'll actually get to feeling better.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's how I distinguish between muscle and bone.
No, that's fantastic. I think so many people are going to benefit from that, from what you just said. I know even my experience with it just kind of confirmed and definitely helped me already. So, but I do have probably a random question again. This is maybe stress fracture lore. I don't really know. But I've noticed that I've had a few stress fractures is that, they tend to hurt a lot when, there's low pressure systems like thunderstorms rolling in. Have you ever heard that before or am I just kind of making that up?
I've definitely heard that. I've had this discussion with my chiropractor because I noticed during the winter time, I tend to train better and feel better during the winter time.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, I don't know. It's kind of weird because, in Oklahoma, I felt better training in the winter time. I think it's because everything is kind of tighter and more compact.
Mm-hmm.
And then during the summertime, it's like I kind of feel like a wet noodle. It's like flopping all over the place. And I start to notice like things like going wrong and, you know, having to worry about hydration. And it's like, I don't know, it's just all these weird things. But as far as like changes in pressure, I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I just heard that and I felt it. I used to sometimes like when I had mine on my foot, when it would about the thunderstorm, I could definitely feel it and my foot would ache more than, and even if it was healed, would ache more than not. So I didn't know if it was just random or if I was like thinking it. You know, I had it in my mind that it was supposed to happen, so it was.
I think it's my, I noticed in my, like I said, my, I think it's more my feet. And I've noticed this more over time as I've gotten older that my feet feel better during the winter time than they do during the summertime. And I think it, like I said, I think it's because during the winter time, everything's kind of tighter and it's holding together better
mm-hmm.
Versus the summertime where things start to kind of spread apart and get looser. And I start to notice more pains in my feet during the summertime than during the wintertime. So
interesting.
I don't know. I think, like I said, I think it's more air temperature, but I don't know. Maybe there's something with the pressure change.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
So before we get on to our last question, I do want to make one quick plug for our new product, Strength Training for Runners. If you're listening to this interview up to this point, and you've listened to some of the other interviews in the past, you've definitely interested in learning how to make yourself a better runner. You've listened to Camille today talk about how she invested the time in learning how to become a better runner, both from watching her husband and other elite runners train, as well as diving into a lot of the research and clinical applications. You've also heard about how Camille suffered from multiple stress fractures as a result of her body not being able to be quite ready to handle the intensity of hard running that she was trying to accomplish. And that's why we created the Strength Training for Runners product. Having been a coach for over 7 years, I've seen these types of injuries happen over and over. So I wanted to create something that would not only help runners stay injury-free, but allow them to train harder and run smarter. So if you want to learn how to make yourself that stronger, more efficient, and less injury-prone runner, and you're ready to make that commitment to yourself and your training, I urge you to check out runnersstrengthtraining.com. We asked every expert we could find. We spent months performing research and used the collective experience of the Runners Connect staff to put together 18 running-specific strength routines that will help you run stronger, stay injury-free, and make the transition to minimalist running if that's your goal. More importantly, we have specific prescriptions for how to include strength training for every race distance from 5K to the marathon, general fitness, weight loss, beginners, and more. We'll teach you exactly which days you need to do strength training, as well as what routines to include. If you're ready to take the next step and act on some of the great lessons you've learned in our interviews and what you've learned from Camille today, now is the time. Visit runnersstrengthtraining.com.
I guess so. My last question, and I really like to ask this to athletes and coaches as well, is, you know, what's the, you know, if you could go back to yourself, you know, maybe 5-6 years ago, and I know you kind of weren't running, so the question might be a little bit different, but, you know, what's one thing that you wish you would have done you know, starting earlier, you know, if you could go back 4 years ago or 5 years ago and tell yourself something, you know, what would it be? What would you try to change that you feel would make yourself a better athlete now, a better runner now?
I actually lived and trained with my friend Janet Cherubon-Balcom last year, and she had a really easygoing lifestyle. And, you know, if she didn't feel like running because she just felt tired or felt like taking a day off or that sort of thing, she would rest.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I had it, I think I had this mentality, you know, 4 to 5 years ago that you have to grind it out like all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that to take a day off is like almost like a dirty word or something.
Right, right.
And I learned from her and from my own experience the past year that when I start to feel tired and I wake up, I'll wake up and I'll literally feel like I just don't feel like running today.
Mm-hmm.
And I will take a day off and I will actually bounce back and run faster because I took a day off. So I think I've learned, especially the past year and from living and training with Janet, to be okay with, you know, maybe skipping a run or taking a day off.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a huge difference in my times and my ability to recover from marathons. I mean, I've dropped, like, I think the just my mile repeats alone, I've dropped like 25 seconds the past
wow.
year. yeah, so I've gone, you know, I've dropped a lot of time, and I think it's just because I'm recovering a lot better.
Yeah.
And it's just that simple little thing, of, you know, being able to be okay with taking a day off or, you know, skipping a run. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, we'll move runs or we'll move workouts around,
mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm feeling tired and, you know, or change a workout. So I definitely think that's made a huge difference for me.
Yeah. I mean, I feel the same way about my running career is that I definitely just the same way. I would just every day I was like, well, I got to run. And even if it didn't make sense, you know, to run from how I was feeling kind of perspective where a day off would have done so much better. I definitely wish I could have gone back and taken some rest days because there were some
yeah.
times where it was just like, I look back and I'm like, what were you doing? but it's funny, you know, obviously we're not the only people that struggle with that. You know, a lot of the
yeah.
athletes I work with, like some of the hardest emails I have to write are when I need to tell somebody to take a day off, you know, because they're feeling, you know, I'm looking at their log and their 3 days have just felt terrible today. You know, I'm like,
yeah.
okay, we need to take a day off. And I know it's like,
exactly.
they're just going to be like, no, you're stupid. You know, I'm not listening to you. But sometimes it always helps again, when you have elite runners like yourself, you know, talking about having, you know, going through that process and it making them faster in the end. So I
yeah.
appreciate you sharing.
Yeah, so I hear the other thing I was going to point out, I hear a lot of elite runners talk about consistency.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you're generally consistent with your training, like you're keeping your mileage relatively high and you're
mm-hmm.
being consistent with the quality work and that sort of thing, you know, it's not going to hurt you to take a day off.
Right.
You know, I think you have to be more as you get more experience with the running. I think you have to be more in tune with what your body's telling you.
Right.
And it's better off to if your body's tired, you just got to listen to it and take a day off,
mm-hmm.
and it will make a world of a difference. You
yeah.
know, how you feel thereafter. So.
So true. So true.
Yeah.
Well, Camille, I definitely have taken enough of your time today, but I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day to share your wisdom and experience. This was a great interview. I feel like I learned a lot, and so I know, you know, my audience is definitely going to appreciate it. If you don't mind telling people where you have, obviously we mentioned your blog a couple times. Where can we find that? What's the URL?
Yeah, it's CamilleHeron.com.
Okay.
So should I spell that out?
Yeah. Why don't you spell it out, and we'll include it in the show notes. So if for people that are listening through iTunes, you can just go ahead and visit our site, Runners Connect, and look for our video interviews, and you'll see it at the bottom of our post. But go ahead and spell it out for everybody.
Okay,
and actually, we
yeah,
do a transcript, so the transcribers will be able to spell.
Okay.
It.
Okay. So it's my name, CamilleHeron. .com.
Awesome. Great. And I also want to, obviously you run professionally, and I want to give you a chance to, I guess, plug some of your sponsors. I see you have the Power Bar shirt on.
There you go.
and I think it's so great that companies are supporting athletes like yourself who are, you know, trying to make that next step and make that jump. Who else is on kind of your sponsorship team?
Yeah, so my primary sponsor is MarathonGuide.com. So MarathonGuide.com is the main website around the world for getting information about the marathon. And I mean, there's just everything you could want to know about the marathon is on that website. And you know, probably its most popular thing is its calendar and the comments that people make about marathons. And so
they do reviews for specific marathons, correct?
Yeah. So they have all this information about every marathon. And, you know, before I got sponsorship with them, I used to go to that website, you know, and read the comments and try to figure out, you know, what a course was like and that sort of thing. So it was a huge stepping stone for me. I was real excited when I got sponsorship with them. And, I mean, we have an amazing team of athletes that we kind of have a different tilt on running because we're trying to run more. We're trying to push the limits as far as running more marathons, so the quantity of marathons versus quality of marathons. So that's kind of what I've decided to base my running career on, is trying to test the limits of both quality and quantity. And you know, not only am I trying to improve my marathon time, but I'm also trying to run so many marathons, you know, and average a certain time and that sort of thing, and try to win a lot of marathons as well.
That's cool.
As far as my other sponsors, Power Bar, it was pretty much a dream come true for me to get sponsorship with Power Bar. I ate my first Power Bar when I was in fifth grade, and really, it was kind of like eating astronaut food.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
I thought it was the coolest thing. I was like, this is so weird, but it's so cool, you know? And so for me to get sponsorship with them was, it's made a huge difference for me, and making sure that I'm always getting enough calories and fueling myself, especially when I'm traveling, trying to make sure I'm getting enough calories.
Right.
So, but as far as my other sponsors, I'm also sponsored by 2XU, who makes really awesome clothing and compression gear. And then also Innovate, who makes really awesome shoes.
Okay.
And then Hyperwear, who makes, they make a weight vest and an ice vest.
Okay.
And then I've also got a couple of other smaller sponsors, Nalgene and, Wright Socks, they've sent me stuff, and Oakley, and,
Very cool. Good. Well, it's always great to, like I said, see those companies supporting athletes like yourself, and like I said, that are putting themselves out there. So obviously, I'm glad that we got a chance to mention them, and hopefully listeners of the podcast can check them out, because they definitely make some great products, and they're definitely supporting the sport of running. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely recommend that other athletes, you know, look outside the shoe box and try to seek out other smaller sponsors that can help them with their running career. And it's been really fun for me, because I've been able to test out a lot of really cool products, and you know, give feedback to the company, and you know, give a shout out to my friends, you know, hey, I recommend this product to you. So it's been a really, that's probably been one of my favorite parts of being a professional athlete, is you know, the fact that I can help these other smaller companies, and it's really fun.
Cool. Well, like I said, thank you again for taking the time. It's been an absolute pleasure. And again, thank you for being a guest on our show.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Jeff.
You're welcome.